Good evening and welcome to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. I'm Rob Mulhern, joined in the studio tonight, but as ever, by Brendan Horgan. And of course, Gab Sidhu is here. Rob Brennan is away on holidays. Now, coming up on the show tonight, we're going to be hearing from Stacia Long. She's coming in to talk to us about the sport of diving and its growing popularity. We're also going to be hearing from world free running champion, Derby born Tim Sheaf. He's talking to us about his great achievement last week, as we said, world champion. And we've everything from athletics to golf to football to transfers and lots of other stuff. But Gav, it's not often that athletics tops the bill in the sports show, but it's been a big week for athletics.
It has, especially for Jessica Ennis, the lovely Jessica Ennis, securing Britain's first ever heptathlon gold at the World Championships in Berlin. I don't know if you saw it, Rob, but it was a completely dominant display from the young Brit. She's 23, still only 23 years old, and she finished on a mammoth 6,731 points. That's 238 points clear of second-placed Germany's Jennifer Oyser. I'm pretty sure I said her surname completely wrong there, but there we go.
I don't even know how they'd accumulate a points tally like that, Gav, just looking at it, but...
But it's, you know, they do 100 metres, then they do high jump, long jump, this and that. But Ennis fell just 100 points short of the British record held by Denise Lewis. Great news there. Great news for Britain. Great news for Jessica Ennis. Great news for athletics, really.
So that was Jessica. But, Bren, you were telling me before I went on air, Phillips. Yeah. Now, you pronounce the second name.
Phillips Aduwu. Or I think it's Phillips Aduwu.
Yeah,
Phillips, he won the triple jump gold medal, so we've got the second gold medal for Britain. He jumped his personal best of 17.73 metres. He's 30 years old, and he missed out on the Olympic gold in Beijing.
Now, this is the guy, he's quite extroverted guy, isn't
extroverted,
that right?
He's got... You'll notice he's got the long big socks and the big bright hair, and he's got a stud in his lip as well, I think.
So. And the eyebrow as well, innit?
And the eyebrow. He likes his piercings.
He does.
Yeah. But 30 years of age, so he's been around for a while, Brent.
He's been around for a good long while, and this is his first World Championship gold medal. He was in tears afterwards. He's so many times come so close, but just been pipped at the last minute. He beat... We're gonna go with the pronunciations again.
Yeah.
But he beat... Portugal's Evora, his first name. I don't know his first name, but his second name is Evora anyway, who was second with 17.55. But he's the Portuguese guy who pipped him for the gold medal in Athens, or in Beijing.
So that was another feel-good story for athletics this week. But and there was one more, is that right, Bren?
I wouldn't say it's feel-good, but... Britain's world champion, double world and Olympic champion, Christine Ohorogu, the 400 metres runner, failed to retain her gold medal in the 400 metres. She ended up fifth with a personal best of the season, not a personal best, a season's best of 50 seconds, 0.21, which was her season's best. So she put 100% in, but she still ended up fifth to America's Sanya Richards, who... came home in 49 seconds flat, so it wasn't great news for Christine at all.
But, of course, the biggest story of the week and the one that everyone's talking about...
There's only one man they're talking about in athletics, isn't it, Rob?
Does he have a nickname yet, Bren? Or...
Is it Lightning? Would it be Lightning? Superman? Michael Johnson used to be Superman, but there's been rumours of him... I'd call him Lightning myself.
Gav, did you watch Usain Bolt's performance on Sunday night?
Oh, goodness me, Rob. I got downstairs, switched the telly on, just in time. I got in, went upstairs to my room, you know, as you do, go on your laptop, check your emails and all that. Go on BBC Sport. You know the way they have that the streamlining video.
Sure.
You know, Usain Bolt coming up, legged it downstairs, switched the telly on, just as they were lining up. One of the best races of all time.
Now, even though he smashed his own world record by 0.10 of a second, is that right, Gav?
0.11.
0.11.
Yeah.
Just reading the pundits during the week are saying that he actually slowed. The stats show that he actually slowed over the final 40 meters. And that he is capable of running the 100 metres even faster again.
Well, he's saying he can do 9.4, can't he?
9.4. So it's, I mean, we were chatting about this before we came on. I think it was the Sunday Times last week ran a caption, an illustration of where the last 10 years champions have come on an illustration relative to Bolt. And I mean, he smashed them all. Like, obviously, he's breaking the records, but when you actually see it by distance, how far ahead he is of Lewis when Lewis won his Olympic gold, of Johnson, even when Johnson that time was illegal, but Maurice Greene, it's just unbelievable how fast this guy is running.
I mean, who was it who came second? Was it Tyson Gay?
Tyson Gay, yeah.
Who came second, and he broke the American record of 9.71. He got 9.71. But to look at the which is an amazing time in itself, unbelievable time. But to look at the distance between the two, it just looks so... He makes it look so easy. In the lineup before the race, he was making jokes at the camera and faces at the
always does
kissing. He's so relaxed, and he's a great freak of nature.
Has he really, like, he's really upped the profile of athletics? I think he's really popular. He's made the sport.
He's a superstar.
He's given it the profile again, hasn't he?
One word. That will define Usain Bolt now. He's a superstar. He's up there with Michael Jordan. He's up there with Tiger Woods. He's up there with Roger Federer. You know, he is a superstar of sports. But going back to what you said, Brendan, about, you know, he just makes it look so easy. And he did actually make the rest of the field look slow. You're talking about Tyson Gay in second, breaking the American national record, getting 9.71. Dwayne Chambers, our very own Brit, came in sixth. He got a season's best of 10 seconds flat. And that's, you know, 10 seconds flat. That's a quick time as well.
Definitely.
But it looked about, you know, 15 seconds, you know, compared to Bolt, of course. Asafa Power coming in third, fellow Jamaican. He got 9.84.
And and of course, Bolt is only 22, so...
He's just a kid. He's got so much sprint, as they say, reach their peak late 20s, early, not maybe not early 30s, but the late 20s is when sprinters should reach their peak. Also, his height. They say his height should be a disadvantage in the 100 metres, but he takes less strides than everyone else. And he's,
But that 9.58 has taken a lot out of him. You've seen, you know, if you've been watching athletics in the 200 metres, he has looked tired, he's looked jagged. He hasn't been doing his antics as much as he did in the 100 metres on the camera before the 200 metre races. You know, let's see if...
And I'd imagine as well, Gav, that it's like mental tiredness as much as anything, just the preparation and the stress and... trying to get it all right at the beginning. I'd say it's very... I'd say the focus for that particular race in athletics is, like, so intense.
Definitely. But he seems to take it in his stride.
Can anyone come and threaten? The trend of athletics over the last 10 years is it doesn't take long before someone else comes to take the mantle of, like, running world champion. But is there anyone there that could even hope to run a time like Bolt's?
At this moment... Personally, I feel that record will never be beaten. I think the only person to break 9.58 is Bolt himself.
It's Bolt himself. Anyway.
9.58.
Definitely a lot more to come. More to come from Usain Bolt. We're going to take a quick music break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Stacia Long about another big kind of track and field, water sport, diving. So join us after this.
Hello and welcome back to the 101.4 on FM sports show. A couple of weeks ago we were on the show and we mentioned Tom Daly becoming the world champion at diving, and as a sports team we sat back and we said we know absolutely nothing about diving, not a clue. We know about Tom Daly and we know that you have to jump off of a diving board, but that's as far as our expertise goes. So we have Stacia Long, who is the London Region Diving Manager, is that correct?
Yep.
And she's here basically to educate us on diving. So Stacia, as I said, we know nothing about diving, so where do you start? You want to get into diving, let's start there. What do you do? Do you need to be a good swimmer, or how do you start?
Well, you need to be confident in deep water, I wouldn't say that you need to be a strong swimmer. We take kids from 5 years old, and as long as they're happy to jump into deep water, then we can teach them to dive. So, yeah, basically just find a local diving program and a trained coach, and you can start from there.
So what would be the first kind of things you show to beginners?
First of all, we get them just to do things off the poolside, so we don't get any diving boards involved at all. We normally get them to do some jumps, and we get them confident in water, and then we would normally start teaching them by sitting on the edge so that we minimise the amount of space between them and the water. And I think the hardest thing for most kids is actually to overcome your body's natural instinct to go in feet first. Some kids find it really easy, some kids find it difficult. So just basically getting people to go in head first. If you've got a child who wants to learn, one of the easiest things is just to get them in the shallow end of a swimming pool and try and get them to turn upside down in the water. That simulates the action of diving, and you sort of find out whether they're happy to put their head under and turn themselves upside down into the water.
So from there, you've got the basics down, you're quite confident. What's then the next step?
I think one of the biggest things that we emphasise is obviously safety. We teach them how to enter the water safely, and we teach them a specific hand grab, because obviously you want the hands to enter the water first, and we encourage them to keep their hands above their head when they're going into the water, so that if they do dive and go right down to the bottom, that it's their hands that hit the water first and not their head. And then it's just a matter of technique, really. Once they've learnt the technique, then you simply add half a somersault each time, and before you know it, you're doing 3.5 somersaults.
It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that.
So what, just, you said a hand grab. What's, is that literally just putting your hands together above your head?
It's basically, the way I normally teach it is you put the hand out in front of you that you'd normally write with, so that you're having a look at your knuckles, and then using the other hand, you grab hold of your fingers and you make as big a surface area as you can. And what that does is that actually creates a hole in the surface of the water for the rest of your body to travel through. Tom Daly, for example, when he's diving off 10 metre, hits the water at almost 40 miles an hour. And I've dived off 10 metre before, and if you don't have your hands grabbed, it can really hurt. So it's like hitting concrete. So what you need to do is you need to create a large area that breaks the surface of the water, and hopefully if your body's in the right position, you follow through it really nicely, and it's when you get the trademark rip, which Tom's so good at.
And if it's not in the right position?
That's why we start off low. That's why we start off the poolside.
So you said jumping off of 10 metres, you build up to 10 metres.
Of course, yeah. I mean, there's only 7 10 metre facilities in this country anyway, so the likelihood that you'll be in one of those is unlikely. Most pools have the lower springboards. Quite a few facilities have a 5 metre platform, which is what most people would be accustomed to. You've got the 1 metre springboard, the 3 metre springboard.
Are these the ones that bounce?
Yeah. And it's a tussle. Some kids prefer springboard, some kids prefer platform. On platform, there's technically less that can go wrong because you're starting off from a hard surface. On a springboard, you've got to get yourself in time with the board as well. But obviously the springboards are easier to start with because they're closer to the water, so you've got less of the fear factor going on.
Right, so when we watch these events, we see an awful lot of flips and somersaults and stuff. How do you bring that into the training process? You don't just say, try and
do
a flip.
Obviously, first of all, we teach the kids how to do the shapes that they need for diving. There are 3 basic shapes in diving. First is the straight position. Second of all is the tuck position, where you see the divers tucking their knees into their chest.
A bit like a bomb.
Yep. And then the third position is the pike position, which is where you're bent at the hips and you've got straight legs. The Chinese can demonstrate it beautifully by getting their chest flat on their legs. You or I might make an attempt at reaching for our toes. But obviously, the tighter your body is, the smaller your surface area, and the closer you are to the centre of gravity, the faster you spin. So if you're travelling in a straight position, you're going to rotate slower. If you pike, you rotate slightly faster. And if you tuck, that's when you rotate most quickly. So the multiple somersaulting dives that you see, for example, one of the most recent additions to the diving list is the front 4.5 somersaults off a 10 metre board. And that at the moment is only being competed in the tuck position. I'm sure there's a little Chinese guy somewhere that can do it piked. But at the moment, it's being competed in the tuck position. That's because that's how you spin most quickly.
Okay, you mentioned the Chinese there. Obviously, yep. We have the world champion at, is it at what? What is Tom Daly?
Tom is the world champion on the 10-metre platform in the men's event. So it's not a junior event. It's a full-blown senior competition. And at 15 years of age, he is the world champion. So it's not...
And representing Great Britain, too.
Exactly. That's the most important. So it's not like Europeans where you've not got the Chinese, you've not got the Americans. This is... everyone in the world.
So where do the British rank, where do they rate in ranks of being the best divers in the world? You mentioned the Chinese there. Are we anywhere as close?
China are the leading diving nation. At the 2008 Olympics, they won 7 out of the possible 8 gold medals.
Really?
Yeah, and if it wasn't for Matthew Mitchum, who was representing Australia, who actually took the 10-metre platform, China would have won all 8 events at the Olympics. So you have to say that they are the leading nation. And I guess most other nations are attempting to either copy what they do or at least get very close to them. But in terms of who the leading nations are, I'd say Great Britain are well up there now.
So what are we doing? What are you as diving coach, what are we doing to get closer to the Chinese?
Well, one of the main things that British athletes are training now is what's known as dry land. And that's basically what is used to teach the divers all their skills and their somersaults. So, for example, when they first learn a dive, they might learn it in a gymnasium. They might simply start off, like, if I was going to teach you how to do a somersault, I might get you to do a forward roll just on a mat on the floor, because then you remove most of the things that can go wrong. So the only thing that you're thinking about is that one rotation of somersault. So most of the divers learn their dives and learn their lead-ups, which is where they're learning a new dive, either on a dry board in an overhead harness or on a trampoline. So kids who've got a gymnastic or a trampolining background probably have a bit of a head start over other kids, because maybe they're used to doing the somersaulting or the twisting actions that they'd need to do in diving, and those skills are quite transferable.
Okay, so what are the Great British hopes for 2012? Are we gonna have more than one medal? Are we gonna have any?
I'd say Tom's definitely a medal prospect. Obviously, he's still got a bit of growing left to do, but a lot of people doubted whether he'd get to where he is now. I was actually in Sheffield when he won the under-18 10-metre championships when he was 10. And he became British champion age 10. And a lot of people said, oh, once he starts getting homework and once he gets interested in girls, he might not stay in the sport. But he's proved everybody wrong.
What kind of training now then would it take to be a world champion? Not necessarily at the age of 10 or 15, but what kind of training would someone like Tom Daly put in?
I'd say about 60 or 70% of his training is done outside of the pool. It's not done in the pool. Because Tom is still growing, one of the things they have to keep an eye on is the fact that he's more vulnerable to injury. I think about a year ago, he was only actually doing about 8 dives a night up on 10 metre. Because of the impact it was having on his wrists and his shoulders, and that they're the two joints that are most affected in the body by diving. But that didn't mean that he wasn't still in the pool doing feet first entries on the 7.5 meter, for example, that he would then take up onto 10 meter by putting in head first. But a lot of his training would be in the gym, doing dry land run throughs, possibly being in the harness.
What kind of hours are we talking about now?
A lot. We're probably talking Tom Daly at least 20 to 30 hours a week.
Really?
At least, yeah.
And that's what it takes to be a world champion.
Yeah, at that level.
So any listeners out there who might want to get in diving, or might may have kids who they want to get into diving, where can we go? Where can we find more information? Because that was one of the things we said as well a couple of weeks ago was, I don't have a clue where I'd go to go diving.
Well, there's a London Swimming website, which is www.londonswimming.org. Okay. And on there, it's actually got a link to my email. So I get probably 5 or 6 emails a day, actually, from people inquiring as to where their local facility is. How do they get into the sport? Are there places for their kids to go? So if anybody wants to email me, they can, and just let me know where they live and whether it's an adult or a child that wants to take part. And then obviously I can put them in touch with the best place to go. There are 8 diving clubs in London. Most of them are competitive, and some offer just lessons for children. Some offer lessons for children and adults. We get quite a few adults that get involved in diving as part of their stuntman training. Yeah. So,
do you have any free runners coming in at all?
I haven't taught any. I don't know of any in London, but I'm sure that they'd make very good divers because they're obviously very spatially aware. And that's one of the things that you need for diving.
Yeah, just a plug, just because we've got an interview with the world champion for coming up on the show. So I just thought I'd plug him.
I'm sure I could offer him a facility to come and have a go in.
we'll suggest it to him. We're in the depths of a recession. Is it an expensive sport to take up?
No. One of the best things about diving in London is that 95% of the diving clubs are voluntarily run. I run a diving club that's run fully by volunteers. And generally, because diving is a minority discipline, it is a smaller discipline compared to something like football or rugby. We do try to make it acceptable for everybody, and something that everybody can have an opportunity to do.
Because there's also slight perceptions that maybe it's quite an upper class sport. It seems expensive sport.
One of the main initiatives that we've been plugging actually over the last 2 years is the new ASA initiative called Flip and Fun. And we're actually training swimming teachers to be able to coach the basic skills of diving, because they're generally the people that see the kids first. We often get kids who come from swimming lessons either because they've got bored or they just want to do something more challenging. So we sort of identified that if we got the swimming teacher to be able to teach them the basic skills, that once they'd learnt those, either it would encourage them to join a diving club, or once they did join the diving club, they'd actually have a bit of a head start because they'd know the basics. And a lot of boroughs within London have actually offered free diving lessons.
Really? Free?
Yeah, absolutely free. We ran a series between September and Christmas of last year, where we opened it up to 60 kids at a time on 3 separate Saturday afternoons, one in each month. And we had a massive take up from the kids, and so many of them joined the club afterwards because they just simply didn't know what diving was like. Half of them didn't know that there was a pool around the corner from them that had diving facilities.
They sound a bit like us.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's been a really good initiative that the ASA have come out with. I've actually delivered a number of the courses to swimming teachers, and it's one of the few courses where I've come away and the swimming teachers have said that they've never learned so much, and that it is something that they will go and use in almost every session because the kids love it. They do their swimming up and down, and then to be given the chance to learn how to dive and jump in properly is excellent. And for parents who are listening, it's an excellent safety thing. If your kid was ever to get into difficulty in the water, to be able to have confidence in deep water can be life-saving. If they were to fall into a pool or a river or something like that, it just stops them from panicking.
A life skill.
Definitely a life skill.
Thanks very much for
coming on.
Once again, the website where we can find more
information? It's www.londonswimming.org, and there's all the information on there that you need. If there's anything that you don't know, you can simply click on my name on there and it'll email straight through to me and I'll get back to people straight away. So
brilliant. Thanks
excellent.
Very much for coming on.
Thank
We're
going to
have a bit of Chuck Berry.
Hello and welcome back to the Sports Show on 101.4. on FM. That was Stacia Long in talking about the sport of diving. You enjoyed that, Gav?
Loved it.
No, it was interesting now because we didn't have a clue. We didn't have a clue.
She was very informative as well. I actually have learned something from that.
And of course, if anyone out there wants to find out more about the sport, or just text into on FM. Bren, the address is...
Yeah, you can email us direct at sport@onfmradio.co.uk or text in on 07786206700. If you're a diver, you've been into diving, or we've got something wrong, let us know.
Now, fellas, the sport of free running, Britain has a new world champion. Massive achievement when you think about it. I only realised how big an achievement it was when I seen the coverage on the internet of Derby lad Tim Sheaf, and they had a big event, the World Championships, down in Trafalgar Square last Sunday, Brent, isn't that right?
Last Sunday, anyone who caught it or who didn't catch it missed an amazing event. Those who haven't heard of free running, it's
like a combination of gymnastics and...
Gymnastics,
spatial awareness, athleticism, you could say, bravery.
It's almost impossible to describe, but when you see it, you'll be impressed.
Now, Tim Sheaf was, this was his second go at the World Championships. He came second at the last event and won on Sunday. But Bren, you know what I mean? Did you have any knowledge of the sport, Gav? Have you any opinions on it? Have you seen the ads on TV?
I have no knowledge of free running whatsoever. The only time I've ever seen free running, I saw on BBC One once, and I saw on some music videos as well, some dance videos. I've seen them do all the free running. It's amazing stuff, but no knowledge of it whatsoever, to be honest.
Now, of course, Tim. Well, listeners might know Tim, but they won't be able to see him now. But they might know him from, he was the guy who was, he was involved in the BBC ad, Bren, isn't that right? Jumping over the roofs. And
it wasn't actually him, but he was inspired by, Tim was inspired by the guy. Those who missed it, I'm sure many can remember the BBC advert a few years back of the guy doing all the tumbling across the roofs and jumping from roof to roof, just so he didn't miss his favourite BBC show. That's in essence is what free running is. But Rob, you managed to speak to Tim.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but there's no point in the three of us trying to tell the listeners anyway what the sport is about. We caught up with Tim earlier on in the day, and we asked him to tell us about a sport of which he's now world champion, and this is what he had to say.
Tim, can you tell me about the sport of free running, where it all started?
Okay, well, it came out of France. It was a suburb of Paris called Lys. And there was a guy called David Bell. He did a BBC Rush Hour commercial, and he did a movie called District 13, which was, it came out last year, I think, in the UK. It was a French film, quite underground. But he started it like 20 years ago now. His father was a fireman and stuff, and his grandfather was in the French services, and he just looked for a good way, a very efficient way to move, and he was thinking, if in an emergency, if someone's like in a fire, how can I get there as fast as possible? You know, I don't want to always go up the stairs; that could be the longest way. So he just came up with, started practicing, just getting around buildings and roofs and things like that, from one place to another as fast as possible, and that's how it came about. He just started practicing that with a bunch of friends, and then it evolved to them trying flips off stuff and things like that, and we are where we are today now.
And Tim, how did you get involved in the sport yourself?
I saw a documentary on Channel 4 a few years ago called Jump Britain, and I used to break dance before it, but I saw that, and it just looked like the guys that were doing it just had so much freedom, and you know, and breakdancing can be quite competitive and restrictive, and I just managed to take the skills I already have and the physical abilities, and then started practicing this sport, and I just picked it up quite fast.
So how many years experience now? You're the world champion now at the moment, Tim. So how many years did it take to get to this stage?
5 years. I've been training for 5 years. The first ever World Championships was last year, and I came second in that. And then I just had a good year, I guess, in between.
So how is it a growing sport? Is it big all over the world, Tim, or is there particular countries that it's just very strong in?
It is a growing sport, and it is definitely growing exponentially. But England has got the best scene in the whole of the world, you know. I don't know if it's just the architecture of England or what, but I've been all over the world training with all athletes from all over, and just the areas we have in England and London especially just bodes so well for what we do. And some of the athletes that are in the UK, I mean, there were some that weren't in the competition that are just ridiculously talented, you know.
Can you tell me how you train, Tim?
Yeah. Well, I practice between, I don't know, 2 and 8 hours a day, 10 hours some days. We have friends from all over the country. We drive around to each other, we train in each other's locations, and we just go out into environments on
the
schools.
Winter clubs.
And, yeah. No clubs as such, you know. I mean, there are clubs and there's coaching and things, but we just prefer just to be our own masters, you know, and come up. Then you're not. We make our own path, so to speak. We create things ourselves.
Now, is there a structure to the training, Tim, as there's a structure in other sports, or is it just a matter of kind of
not
enjoying the obstacles and...
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, it's purely enjoyment, and I just do it out of the love for movement and expressing myself and the control I have over my body. Like, over the years, you just feel the progression, and it's so wonderful to know your body's potential more than just the person that walks to work every day, sits down and walks back, you know.
Is there, just watching the coverage of the World Championships,
yep.
do you need to have a reckless side, Tim, to kind of really, I suppose, thrive or flourish in this sport?
Need to have a what, sorry?
Reckless or brave, even.
For me, I mean, some of the other athletes, I think, were reckless because there were quite a few injuries went on in the competition. But for me, people that know me as well said that mine was just one of the safest runs. Like, I did things that I fully 100% knew I could do and was going to land. And I think that really helped because, I mean, one of the criteria for the judges was execution. And I did, because I landed everything, it was executed perfectly. And the fluidity was another one. And if you're landing everything clean, you can move on to the next movement. And it just... I chose a path that was quite difficult, but just that I knew I could do every time. So for me, I don't think there's any recklessness there.
Now, the actual course that was set up for the World Championships,
yeah.
Is that realistic? Does that kind of reflect the type of obstacles you're dealing with day to day?
I mean, yeah, when we train parkour, we do always think that these obstacles, it's more of a mental challenge than a physical to overcome what we're trying to do. And it does bode so well into normal life. We apply this mental challenge and this thought process, and we can overcome obstacles. We do come out every day, like girl problems and you know, and family problems. And it puts you down to earth, and You question everything more, and it helps you come up with a better answer.
How fit do you need to be, Tim?
You know, there's any level of fitness. Anyone can do the sport, you know. It's as simple as being in a car park and you see two parking lines on the floor and you try and jump from one line to the other. And, you know, some people might make it easier than they ever thought they could. And then they might see a curb which is the same distance across and jump between the two curbs. And they're like, oh, man, like, a surprise they can do it, but we always, like back from caveman times, we always needed the ability to run around and jump and climb stuff. And it's still in us, but too many people are just shutting it out and trying to focus on the day-to-day lives. But we've got two arms and two legs and we just don't use them very much.
So is there a kind of great sense of freedom about this type of sport?
That's entirely it for me, you know. I climb on roofs and stuff, and I know it is trespassing, but for me, I don't damage anything, I don't hurt any person, and as long as I abide by that, you know, morally it's correct for me, and it gives you that freedom. You know, some days I just go out with my friends in the evening and we'll just sit on a rooftop and watch the sun go down, and just normal people don't get to experience this because they automatically think it's wrong or dangerous or something. And you know, if you do it properly, it's fine, and the freedom is just the number one drive for me.
Now, Tim, obviously the environment that you'd be conducting your training in, you know,
yeah.
A lot of the public are kind of walking by all the time.
Yeah.
You get some strange looks.
Yeah, and there are people that think you're damaging stuff, or that think you're just some crazy kid and you're going to break your neck, and it's just so far from the truth, you know. We've built up for so long, so many years, and trained day in, day out, blood, sweat and tears for this, you know, and we're so aware of our abilities now. And I mean, there are some people that fully appreciate it, that you would expect. You get old women coming up, oh, well done, that's great, you know, and it's great to see that there are the people that you least expect will appreciate what you do, and that's like one of the great drives for me.
Now, Tim, some of the moves that you that were part of your win and run at the World Championships, the standing flag, is that right?
The walking flag thing, yeah.
Walking flag. I mean, how hard is it to execute a move like that? Maybe you just tell the listeners what's involved in that move.
Well, basically, there's a vertical pole, and I grab both hands on the vertical pole, and my feet are standing on the floor, but then I walk up into the air with my feet, just using my hands on the pole to hold me horizontally out. Once you can do the flag move itself, you know, this is just some creative. I saw it once on YouTube and I tried it, and it really wasn't that hard, but it is getting the initial flag move itself, which is where you've just got two hands on a vertical pole and you hold your whole body out horizontally.
So there's obviously a lot of creativity to this sport as well. Do you find other kind of competitors trying to copy your moves?
Not yet, because they are in the community. I'm seen as like the strength guy, and I do all these strength tricks. And I'm waiting, because eventually there will be a lot more people around that will be, because I'm winning competitions with these tricks. There will be people trying to do them to knock me out, and that's what I've got to stay on top of my game and keep it creative every time.
Now, Tim, in modern sport, you know, I suppose a lot of athletes, they have strict diets, they kind of look after themselves very well. Is it the same for the sport?
Yeah, well, for me, I kind of ate McDonald's the week before. bit similar to Usain Bolt there, and it seemed to work, although I was questioning my stamina for the course quite a lot, but I think I was very lucky, and I will be more careful in future. There are a lot of us that do have proper diets, and I was eating well up until the week before, but I had quite a mad week travelling around and just got caught off guard.
Now, Tim, you must have been delighted when the sport was kind of elevated to the status of World Championships 2 years ago. Can you see it going pro in the future?
Well, I've been making a living off this sport for the past 4 years now, you know. I've been doing adverts and commercials all over the world. There's other countries that have picked it up and that enjoy seeing it more than England, even though England has got the best scene. But yeah, I'm waiting for the stage where it is. There are people in the sport which are like Tony Hawk, you know, and everyone knows Tony Hawk, even though they don't skateboard. So I'm waiting for the day when, you know, people might know my name that just have no idea about the sport.
Now, Tim, for anybody who wants to get involved or is kind of interested in seeing what it's all about, what's the best thing for them to do, or is there any websites that they can go to?
There's a website, www.urbanfreeflow.com, and there's quite a few of my good friends that teach in London there. So for all you London listeners, if you go on that website, go into teaching or coaching, and just drop them an email or try and find out where the classes are. There should be some. There's quite a few all scattered around London, so you might try and find one locally. And the coaches and the very professional.
The last question, Tim. You're a world champion now. Where do you go from here?
Well, I've got a competition on the weekend in Sweden. It's a Red Bull competition. I did another Red Bull competition in Austria a few weeks ago and came second in that. So I've got to try and win one of these Red Bull ones. So yeah, it's just more competitions, more jobs, hopefully more high-profile jobs. I'm just got to keep the ball rolling and look out for my name.
Tim, thanks very much for talking to the show.
Thank you. Cheers.
That was British free running world champion Tim Sheaf. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back after Tom Petty. And welcome back to the Sports Show 101.4 on FM. We had to cut out of that song early because we've a busy football schedule to get through. Gav, What's been happening?
Right, Rob, let's go back to the first day of the new Premier League season. On the August the 15th, Chelsea beat Hull in an early kick-off at the Bridge by 2-1. Portsmouth lost at home to Fulham by 1-0. Wolverhampton Wanderers lost their first game of the season at the Molineux by 2-0 to Zola's West Ham. And Everton, I'm sure everyone knows, were given a footballing lesson at Goodison. 6-1 it finished to the Arsenal. On the Sunday, Manchester United beat Birmingham in a tight one at Old Trafford by 0-0. Tottenham Hotspur, the informed team in the Premier League, beat Liverpool by 2-1 at the Lane. Now, in midweek, Birmingham got their first 3 points of the season with that home win against Portsmouth. Burnley, what a shocker at Turf Moor, 0-0 against United.
What a goal.
Unbelievable result.
Hull City, my team to go down this season for definite. They were thrashed at home at the KC by Tottenham by 5-1. Liverpool thrashed Stoke at Anfield by 4-0. Now, looking ahead to the next batch of games in the Premier League, Arsenal hosting Portsmouth, Birmingham at St Andrews hosting Stoke, Hull up against Bolton, City up against Wolves, Sunderland up against Blackburn at the Stadium of Light, Wigan at the DW Stadium hosting Manchester United. Then on the Sunday, West Ham United at home against Tottenham Hotspur, who are of course top of the table. And then we have Burnley Everton and Fulham Chelsea.
Local derby, lads, a big local derby.
Not forgetting Liverpool and Aston Villa at Anfield on the Monday.
Sorry, I'm going to quickie our other local teams. We've got Brentford, who are fifth in League One with 7 points. They beat Norwich 2-1 on Tuesday night, and they are playing Southampton on Saturday. That's a 3 o'clock kickoff. They're away. Also, our other local team, QPR, have had a dreadful start. Thank God Rob Brennan's not here, because he wouldn't be happy. They're 17th in the Championship. They lost to Bristol City on Tuesday night to a last-minute goal. They also drew to Plymouth the game before to a last-minute goal. And they're playing Nottingham Forest on Saturday at 3 o'clock at Loftus Road.
Now, Gav, there's only been two games, but lots been happening, lots to talk about. Main talking points, maybe London team, the Spurs, top of the Premier League.
Well, Spurs, you know what, they're my team, along with Manchester City, to break into the top four this season. It's this season, I've never been buzzing.
No, Gav, is this after the two wins, or were you saying this last week? Before the
This is after...
I don't remember him mentioning this last week.
Oh, no, you know, I had an inkling with Harry Redknapp in charge, boys, right? That a team's always going to do that. Look what he did at Fratton Park with Portsmouth. He's got these two results against Liverpool, that thrashing against Hull. Brendan, stop it. Right, they're top of the table. I don't think it's fluke. I don't think it's luck. I don't think it's early season form. They're going to be there, be consistent.
Okay, they're going to be there or thereabouts behind the top four anyway, but how long can they hold on to that top spot? Brendan, any thoughts on that?
I reckon they won't have it by the weekend, put it that way.
Well, it's going to be switching all the time, isn't it, in the early
first
part of the
few
season.
Weeks, yeah, you're going to have different teams up and down, so it's going to... It will change.
What about going down?
Well,
Burnley seem to have shocked everyone with an amazing result against Manchester United. Who would have thought that's a fairy tale story? So they shocked a few
people. I don't
know
whether it was somebody on the show here last week anyway said that they fancied Burnley to stay up. And I mean, you pull a result like that out of the bag against Man U midweek, you're going to give yourself every chance in the first part of the season. You're going to get that belief anyway. But Gav, if you're predicting Hull, you know, I think you ought to be a bit worried, because he predicted Rory McIlroy last week to do each way in the USPGA. We'll get to that later. So
We will. But you know what? Hull were on a downward spiral. They're going down along with Portsmouth, and then we'll see who will make up that last relegation spot.
Now, how serious will Man U take that defeat last night?
Ferguson didn't look happy. He did not look happy at all. So I think it'll be back to the drawing board. They would have got the hairdryer treatment, and they will... Probably who are they playing on the weekend again? Remind me there.
United are playing. They're away at the DW to Martinez's Wigan.
I can see Man United winning that 3-0 comprehensively.
But they've always had poor starts to the season, haven't they?
Yeah, they. In fact, they didn't have a good start to the season last year. They won the league, got to the Champions League final, and they didn't have a good start to the season before, where they won the league and won the Champions League.
One of their
league.
Worst ever starts of the season, wasn't it? Either this last season or the season before. So.
Well, quickly, just because we're on a rush, quickly, Crystal Palace had a goal disallowed last weekend against Bristol City. Do we need goal line technology, guys?
Well, I'm surprised they haven't brought it in already. You know, with Hawkeye in tennis, you know, with rugby, with the replays they have in rugby, with the video replays they have in cricket, not football?
Yeah, I suppose, Bren, if it's still happening, and, you know, there's been a few high-profile ones over the last few years. We were talking about them before we came on the show. Roy Carroll a couple of years ago at Man U. Watford, Reading, Gav, you were chatting about that game. So, I mean,
even probably, 1966 World Cup final.
It feels like something that will continue to happen until they're going to bring it in. And even if only saves a couple of results a season, it could be the difference between a team getting promoted or relegated. So,
and we've seen how well it works in rugby. So, it's only going to add 30 seconds to a game, 40 seconds to a game. When you've got players rolling around pretending to be injured, it's not going to add much time to the game.
I suppose there is an argument that the officials are being disempowered by something like that. Where would you stand on that, Bren? Any thoughts? Do the pros outweigh the cons on this one?
Yeah, they've gone on about their respect campaign and all that, but how can you possibly... I mean, anyone who saw that Freddie Sears goal for Crystal Palace, it was ridiculous. So how can you have respect for referees when such simple mistakes are being made and such simple mistakes that could be rectified like that? No problem, you've got a Hawkeye system, there's a beep when it goes over the line. If it doesn't go over the line, no beep, no goal, play on. Quick as that.
Now, talking of mistakes, another guy who made a few uncharacteristic mistakes last week over in the US was Tiger Woods. He first time ever, Brendan, that he was beaten when he was leading on the last day.
First day ever, yeah, that's right. And it was also the first Asian-born male winner of a major championship. Male, I say, because there's some very good Asian female golf players. And that was South Korea's Yang Yong-un.
And he thoroughly deserved it from watching the last day's play. I mean, he pulled off some spectacular shots, particularly his second last on the 18th. I think it was a 3-wood off the fairway.
Off the fairway. And to be honest, the calmness he showed going up that the last nine of the day was amazing. Tiger Woods faltered. Tiger Woods seemed to lose his edge, lose his focus. Yeah, and kept his head down, kept on going. Woods, on a few of the holes, was actually probably 100 yards ahead of him, rushing up to his next shot. You could see the panic in Woods. And there you go. Yang won it by three clear shots. He was 8 under par for the tournament. Woods 5 under par. England's own Lee Westwood was third with 3 under par. And Gav?
Well, it was my McIlroy.
Well, I was going to say, was Gav more surprised with Woods capitulating on the last
few holes?
Well,
he was my man. No, McIlroy was my man.
Or was he more surprised that he picked that he picked a winner for the sports show?
You predicted top seven, Gavin. You were in there.
I did, and I picked Woods to win it, didn't I?
You did.
So
that's a pretty good double. That's a pretty good double. McIlroy was actually 90-1 with certain bookmakers to finish in the top seven. So I hope there's a few listeners out there, Gav, that cashed in your wisdom. Bren, the Ashes, what's happening at the moment?
Well, at the very moment they're in play. We're not going to give you the score because we're going to wait till next week's show when we can actually talk about the entire test once it's over. But it's Freddie Flintoff's final test match. Let's just hope this time next week we're going to be in the studio with a bottle of champagne celebrating an England Ashes series. We're not going to go further than that. Wait for next week for the result.
Okay, and the world of Formula One.
Yep, this weekend is the Valencia Street Race Grand Prix. We were all expecting Michael Schumacher to be back for this one, but the neck couldn't handle the speed, so we're not having Michael Schumacher. As you know, Britain's own Jenson Button still leading the championship with 70 points. Australia's Mark Webber for Red Bull and Sebastian Vettel in second and third. So the pressure is on Jenson Button. They're slowly but surely catching up. Lewis Hamilton's back in form as well. So stay tuned for the Formula One this weekend. It's going to be a great Grand Prix.
Stay tuned. Lots to look forward to this weekend. Lots coming up in the show again next week. I'd like to thank Brendan Horgan for putting the show together tonight. Gav Sadu for his all-around expertise on a variety of sports.
Thank you very much, Rob.
We'll be back next week. Take care, folks. Talk to you then.